in the atmosphere, the drops of Jupiter in her head.
Greetings, programs, and welcome to Quarks and Recreation, Episode 5 on the Outer Solar System. I'm your co-host, Doug.
And I'm your other host, Brandon.
And so we're going to kick it off real quick. We got a lot of ground to cover here in the Outer Solar System, a lot of different planets and objects and interesting stuff. So we should head straight to Jupiter.
4 + 4 = 8.
I'm sorry, we left off with Brandon doing some simple addition. Any more you want to add on that before we move on to Jupiter?
8 + 8 = 16.
See if we can get some Jupiter facts in here. So what do you want to say about Jupiter?
It's big.
It's real big. It's,
and it has a lot of storms.
It's very big. It's all gas. In fact, the four planets of the outer solar system are all gas giants. They don't have a solid surface to speak of. Jupiter is by far the largest. It's 11 Earths wide, and you could fit 1,000 Earths inside it. That's how big it is.
Jupiter, I've always wondered how gas can stay in one place. Is it the gravity or...
It's gravity. Whatever mass there is, whether it's solid or liquid or gas, it still has mass. There's still substance there. Now, it's thinner and more spread out than it would be if it was a solid. But here's the thing. There's so much gas on Jupiter that it still has an incredible amount of gravity. And, of course, as you get down through the clouds of Jupiter, it gets thicker and thicker. And then below the clouds, there's actually layers of different kinds of liquid materials. For example, it's got a huge layer of liquid hydrogen. And at those pressures... The hydrogen actually behaves like a metal, like liquid metal, and it generates the largest magnetic field in the solar system. In fact, the magnetic field and the radiation that comes out of Jupiter is so powerful that if you were even close to Jupiter in an unshielded spacecraft, it would kill you.
Wow.
Yeah.
And by the way, Jupiter doesn't make you stupider.
That's true, unless you were to inhale it, in which case you would probably get a lot of brain damage from the atmosphere. So there is some truth to that, after all. As you mentioned, it does have big storms. The most famous storm is called the Big Red Spot, and it's about 2-3 Earths wide, and
wow.
It's been there for at least since at least the 1600s, the early 1600s. That's when a famous astronomer named Galileo looked at Jupiter through the telescope for the first time and saw that red spot, and it's still there today.
And why is a storm going on so long?
That's a great question. They've done some research. They've tried to model it in a laboratory with computers and certain types of experiments, and what they found is they generated a lot of little storms, and then one by one, the little storms ate each other and got bigger and stronger until there was one sole survivor. And they think that maybe that's what keeps it going. However... recently, the spot has begun to shrink, and as we'll talk about, there was a similar spot on Neptune when we sent a probe there, and we've looked at it since then with telescopes, and that spot is gone. So, just like storms on Earth, they may form and then disappear, but maybe it takes them longer. We're still learning a lot about these types of atmospheres and conditions. They're very different from what we find on Earth.
So Jupiter is 88,000 miles wide, about.
Yeah, that's right.
That's pretty big.
It is very, very big. And actually, because it's so large, its gravity has a lot of really important effects on us here. One thing it does is it sweeps up comets and asteroids that might otherwise hit us. In fact, a few years ago, a comet called Shoemaker-Levy was heading just sort of through the solar system, and they were observing it, and they realized it was on a crash course with Jupiter. And just before it got to Jupiter, Jupiter's gravity pulled it apart into a bunch of little comets, and then those all hit Jupiter, and they hit with so much power that it was each one was more than all the nuclear weapons we've ever used on the planet Earth combined. That's how much power it is.
Wow.
When something hits it, yeah.
That's a lot of power. And if you're planning to go on a road trip, I wouldn't plan to go to Jupiter.
No, like we said before, the radiation would kill you.
Yeah.
And of course, you'd still need other kinds of provisions. Jupiter has four major moons. Io, Europa, Ganymede, and Callisto. And then it's got a whole bunch of smaller moons. But those are the four biggest. And those were also discovered by Galileo when he looked at it. In fact, they're called the Galilean satellites after him. And each one is very, very different. Io is covered in volcanoes. It's the most volcanic thing in the solar system.
Wow.
The reason is it's between Jupiter, which has a crazy amount of gravity, and then its three cousins are moving around outside of it. It's the innermost moon of those four. So as Jupiter pulls on it one way and the moons pull on it on different directions, it actually gets slightly squished and squeezed over time, and that keeps the inside of it hot, and so there's volcanoes going off all the time.
Are the moons and Jupiter, all 67, I know they're probably different sizes, but compared to the Earth, how big are they?
The biggest one is Ganymede. Ganymede is the largest moon in the solar system. In fact, Ganymede is so big, it's bigger than Mercury, and it's close to the size of Mars. Maybe not quite as big as Mars. It's about 3/4 as big. So it's very large. The others are all closer in size to Earth's moon, the four big ones. The rest are all much smaller.
The difference between a planet and a moon is, like, the gravity, probably, right?
Just moons are just objects that are going around a planet. That's the only real definition for them. They're not in orbit on their own around the sun. They've got something that they're following, like our moon follows us, or these moons follow Jupiter. The next one we should probably talk about is Europa, and on our last episode we got a question about could there be life in other places in the solar system. This is one of them. Europa is made mostly of ice. It has a rocky core, but we think there's an ocean under there.
Ice is water, practically, and it melts.
Right, and just like Io is getting squished and squeezed by gravity of the other moons, so is Europa. But instead of volcanoes erupting, we think maybe there could be volcanoes under the water, just like there are like undersea volcanoes on Earth. And those are the types of environments where we've actually found life on Earth. So there's always been a lot of push within NASA to try and get a probe to Europa to see if they can find anything down there. Now you have to find a way to get to Jupiter, land on Europa, and drill through miles of ice to even get a probe down there. So it's not easy, but of all the places there might be life somewhere other than Earth in our solar system, Europa is one of the best candidates.
For the past couple of years, I've heard a lot of questions, just people saying, well, Jupiter obviously is far out, so it must be cold, but yet again, it is full of gas, and gas is relatively hot.
Well, no, gas is like anything else, solids or liquids. It's just going to be as cold or as warm as whatever energy is around. So now Jupiter on the outside is cold because it's much farther from the sun than we are. But on the inside, Jupiter has got a lot of energy and it's hot. Just like the Earth has a core that's hot, Jupiter also is very, very warm on the inside. So it kind of depends on where you are. If you're at the top of the clouds, yeah, it's going to be cold. If you're down closer to the core, it's going to be warm. And since Jupiter doesn't have a solid surface, it's kind of hard to gauge where you would be, what you're kind of describing.
Okay, that makes more sense.
Okay, so we've talked about those moons. Those are the major moons of Jupiter. Jupiter also has a ring, just like Saturn does, but Jupiter's ring is very, very small. And in fact, you can't even really see it very well if you're looking at Jupiter. But if you're behind Jupiter and it's caught in the sun, which is how we discovered it the first time, was we sent a probe out there, and on its way back from Jupiter, it took a picture towards the sun, and it was lit up, and you could see it. So it's a very small little ring.
What makes the rings from, we're going on to Saturn soon.
Yeah.
What, is it asteroids?
Sort of, yeah. I mean, it's basically ice and dust and rocks, and they're very, very small, but there's a swarm of them. And you can think of, like, a swarm of bees can look like a cloud, or,
yeah.
A bunch of dust can kind of have a shape, or sand or snow. It's that kind of stuff. And it's all mostly very small. We can go on to Saturn. Saturn's rings, just like Jupiter's rings or Uranus's rings or Neptune's rings, they're all made of basically the same stuff. And they are everything from tiny, tiny, fine dust-like particles up to boulders maybe the size of a house would be the biggest one.
Wow.
And they're very thin. The rings of Saturn are only a mile thick, but they're very, very, very wide, and there's a lot of stuff there. So in the sunlight, they look like a solid object, like a big, thick ring or an old vinyl record. But they're actually very thin, and they're dusty and wispy. And in theory, it might even be possible to go right through them to the other side and not get hurt. Although, there's still a lot of stuff there. I wouldn't recommend it.
Well, thank you, Jupiter. Thank you for not making us stupider. I think you just got me a little smarter, actually.
There you go. So, we can talk about Saturn. Saturn is the sixth planet. Saturn and Jupiter are both made out of mostly the same things. They're mostly hydrogen and helium. And Saturn, although it doesn't look like Jupiter on the outside, it actually is a lot like Jupiter. It's got very, very fast winds, up to 1,000 miles an hour they can go. They're very, very fast winds. And it doesn't have all of the, like, bands that, like, Jupiter kind of has all these different, like, stripes around it, and it kind of looks like a big piece of bacon, sort of. Saturn actually does look like that, but it's also got a haze on top of that, so it has this nice orange kind of color on top of the bands of color. In fact, the North Pole of Saturn has a hexagon on it.
Really?
Yep. It's this weird storm that's shaped like a hexagon, which we wouldn't think could happen in nature, but we've obviously it's there. We've taken pictures of it, and we've learned some of the math behind why that happens. It's just a quirk of meteorology, but it's there.
The rings obviously are one of Saturn's probably most popular effects. Is the ring of Saturn?
It's very showy. It looks great in pictures, it's just beautiful. And it is made up of objects that either. There's one of our questions. We'll talk about there's a good question on the rings in our mailbag, so we'll talk about them a little more when we get to that. They have spokes in them, which is kind of interesting. We found that out when we sent probes there, and you can see. If you watch the rings over time, you can see these dark, what look like dark shadows move across them, and they're different types of particles moving through the rings as they orbit. So that's kind of interesting.
Yeah.
And the way the rings keep their shape is with what are called shepherd moons. There's actually little tiny moons within the rings, and one moon will go around the outside, and its gravity will kind of pull one way, and then another moon will come along on the inside and pull it the other way, and between the two of them, they keep the rings in line. And there's a bunch of those within the rings of Saturn, kind of keeping them stable over time.
Yeah, so if those rings ever do fall apart, which I doubt, but is it possible that they can fall apart?
Absolutely. I mean, if you think about the way the solar system formed, all of the planets and everything in the solar system formed out of similar like clouds of gas and dust, and over time gravity kind of pulled them together. So scientists have been wondering for a while, are the rings ever going to go away? Are they going to basically coalesce together into a new moon of some kind, or more than one moon? And that process, if it's going on, is going to take a very long time. So not within our lifetime, but
aww.
Yeah, but we'll see. So it could happen. So they could go away. Parts of them are going to fall into Saturn. Parts of them are going to fly off into the space.
Oh, well, that's sad. I like the Saturn rings.
Well, they'll be there for many millions of years, probably.
I wonder
so,
who
we'll
gave Saturn the rings. Was it is Saturn a boy or a girl? Who proposed?
If you like it, then you should have put a ring on it, is the line. So we'll see. We'll talk a little bit about who might have put the ring on it when we get a little into our mailbag. Saturn also has a lot of moons. In fact, Saturn has more moons than any other planet in our solar system. It's also the least dense. It's commonly said if you could find an ocean big enough to plunk Saturn into, it would float because it's very, very diffuse and not very dense. But getting to the moons, it's got over 60 moons. Most of them are pretty small, but it's got a very good collection of them. And it has a couple of really interesting ones, which we should probably talk about. The first one that we should talk about is Mimas.
Mimas
is not very interesting except for one feature. Mimas looks like the Death Star. It's got a big crater in the side of it. In fact, what scientists determined is it's the maximum crater you could have without busting the moon completely apart. So at some point, the rest of the moon's kind of boring. It's just a bunch of craters and it's a rock. But that's kind of neat. The more interesting moons, one is Enceladus. Enceladus is like Europa. It's covered in ice. And there's actually geysers of water spraying out of the South Pole. So that's another spot where there could be life in the solar system. And actually, because there's these geysers and these vents, it might be easier to get to that underground water than it would be on Europa.
Yeah.
So that's a place you want to... Enceladus is also the brightest object in the solar system. It's because it's covered in snow and ice. It reflects more light than anything else in the solar system. So.
This is Pluto, and I just like planets. And Pluto's so far away and mm-hmm. so small, but the pictures I've seen of Pluto are relatively clear. How do they get such clear pictures of planets in general?
Well, it depends on how you do it. One is we send probes. We send a camera there on a robot to go take a picture of it. But from Earth, you just have to use really, really high magnification and lenses. And what we use normally around here is the Hubble telescope. It's in orbit, so the Earth's atmosphere and clouds and things don't get in the way and things don't get fuzzy. But even then, the best pictures of Pluto we can get with the Hubble are not great. It looks like a big, white point of light. And we've been able to make out very, very limited things on the surface in terms of like there's some slightly brighter regions and some slightly darker regions. But we're sending a probe that will get to Pluto in about a year from today. So next July, we'll have up close pictures of Pluto to see what it really looks like. And we'll talk about Pluto a little more as we get farther out into the solar system.
Yeah. goodbye, Saturn. I think that wraps up with
her. Actually, her, I think. But there's one more moon of Saturn we need to talk about before we go, and that's Titan. Titan is the second biggest moon in the solar system after Jupiter's Ganymede. But Titan's really interesting because it has a thick atmosphere. No other moons have this. In fact, it's slightly thicker than Earth's atmosphere, and on the surface, there are rivers and great lakes.
There is life.
Well, we don't know about life. Well, it would be very different from life on Earth if there is any. We've sent a probe that landed on Titan and went to the surface, and it didn't see forests and things like that. It did see the rivers and the oceans, but they're not made of water like they are on Earth. The atmosphere is very different. It's made of liquid ethane and methane. So that's kind of like things we use for fuel around here. But what is interesting is that all of these molecules are complex organic molecules. And these are the kind of molecules that we think were the basis for life forming on Earth. So Titan is almost like what we think Earth might have been like in a time capsule 4-5 billion years ago. It's just very cold and it hasn't changed since. So it's possible that there could be types of life on Titan that would be very, very different from life on Earth because it's just so much colder there. It's probably about 200 degrees colder on Titan than it is here. I don't have it in front of me what the surface temperature is, but freezing cold for that. But because there's a liquid lakes, there's something that life could move around in and maybe form. Who knows? We have to go back. We've only sent the one probe, so we've got to do some more research. But it's a pretty interesting place. Anyway, enough about Saturn. We can move on to Uranus.
I pronounce it different. It seems like kids pronounce it
Uranus.
Yeah.
Well, you know, it's easy to get behind Uranus. It's a place you really want to explore. You want to get up in Uranus as much as you can. We can do this all day, but it's actually definitely pronounced Uranus. Uranus is my personal favorite planet because it's the weirdest, or one of the weirdest. And you're making a gesture that it's on its side. That is one of the weirdest things about it. There's a plane called the ecliptic plane, and that's all of the planets are pretty much in this horizontal record shaped plane as they move around the sun. And Uranus is in that, but it's tilted all the way at a 90 degree angle. So its north pole, for example, when we went to visit it, was facing the sun.
Wow.
And now it's actually even because it's got an orbit that's about 84, 86 years. So when we visited Uranus, that was in 1986. And in the year since, Uranus has moved in its orbit, and now its rings are looking at the sun. So it's actually spinning just like our planet is, except on its side. And then in another 25 years or so, the South Pole will be facing the sun, and it moves around the Earth like that.
So Uranus is very big, isn't it?
Uranus is huge. It's not as big as Jupiter and Saturn. Uranus is about 4 Earths wide. And it's what we call an ice giant. It is a gas giant, just like Jupiter and Saturn, but Uranus and Neptune are ice giants in that they have a slightly different interior. There's more water ice in them and ammonia and methane. That's why they're kind of blue. The methane is what makes them blue. They also have kind of slushy, slurpy kind of interiors.
Ooh, that sounds good now.
And you wouldn't want to go to these. It's going to be really cold and full of ammonia and noxious stuff. But they're slightly different than Jupiter and Saturn on the inside. But the reason Uranus is on its side, we think, is because it was hit by something some time ago. We don't know how long ago, but at some point in its history, it was hit pretty good. And that's why. It's got rings, just like Saturn does. It's got about 9 little rings. And so it's not clear how old they are. They could be a product of this impact that happened, or they could be a newer thing. It's got 5 major moons and a whole bunch of little ones. And it's otherwise pretty similar. Most of those moons are kind of boring rocks, too, except for Miranda.
Miranda
is the smallest and the innermost of Uranus's 5 major moons. But what's interesting about it is if you look at it, it's got some of the weirdest geography you'll ever see in the solar system because they think it was blasted apart and then it fell back together again from gravity. So it looks like someone scrambled it. It's very strange looking. And that's pretty much it we can say for Uranus. A couple other weird things about it. So its north pole is facing sideways, and it's got a magnetic field. But normally the magnetic field would be part of the core of the planet, so it would be in the middle and also sort of around the geographic north pole or the axis of the planet. Uranus's magnetic field is off to the side. So it looks like someone took a big magnet and stuck it. It's off center, and we have no idea why it's like that. We still need to do a lot of data. We've only sent one probe to Uranus. And
it never came back.
It did not come back. We'll talk a little bit more about that probe later on. So that pretty much does it for
Uranus.
For Uranus. If you want to talk more about Uranus, we can talk about Uranus all day long.
That'd be fun.
Yeah. Who doesn't like talking about Uranus? Let's move on to Neptune.
Neptune.
Do you know anything
about
Neptune?
That's a place to be.
That's a very cold place to be.
Well, you know, if you're getting sick of, you know, the heat over on Earth, go to Neptune.
It is the coldest. It's also it actually has the fastest winds of any planet in the solar system.
Probably thousands of miles.
It's about 1300 maximum that we clocked it. It's very, very fast. And the reason for that is, so normally the sun's heat is what drives weather. Heat makes the atmosphere move around in different ways. The hot air goes up, the cold air goes down, and the difference between those things causes them to move. What's interesting is there's just enough energy to get the wind moving, but there's not so much energy that it causes a lot of turbulence in the atmosphere. And turbulence is like friction. It would slow weather down because, you know, if you've got a big front of cold air and it encounters a turbulent area, it's going to hit that and kind of disperse or go in a different direction. So what happens is when there's no turbulence, the wind just gets going and nothing gets in its way. So it goes faster and faster and faster, even though it's, you know, 4 billion miles from the sun. So that's kind of interesting.
I wonder if any My Little Ponies live on Neptune, because it's so windy they can fly in the wind.
I think they would die in that wind. I think they would get poor ponies getting blown to bits, getting pwned. Neptune has one major moon and a bunch of little ones, but the biggest one is called Triton. And Triton's kind of interesting because, one, it's going the wrong way around Neptune. It's going the backwards direction. So there's no way it could have formed that way. So what we believe is that Triton was captured by Neptune's gravity. It got too close to Neptune and is now...
Backwards Bob.
Backwards Bob and eventually dead Bob, because the orbit is very slowly decaying over time. Triton's getting closer and closer to Neptune as it goes around. And someday, and you know, probably maybe a billion, 2 billion years from now, it's going to either crash into Neptune or it's going to get broken apart into little pieces.
Crash into Neptune, then Neptune will crash into Uranus. Uranus will crash into Saturn. Saturn will crash into Jupiter. Jupiter will crash into Mars, and so on.
Only if they're in just the right place, but probably not likely to happen. Triton's kind of neat because it has geysers. Yeah, you would think that there couldn't be enough energy to heat stuff up that far out from the sun, but it turns out the geysers aren't made of water like they are on Earth. They're made of liquid nitrogen, which is some of the coldest stuff around, but at that distance from the sun, it will behave... The liquid nitrogen behaves sort of the way water does on Earth in terms of it getting hot and bursting out of the ground like a geyser. And we saw them. We didn't expect to see it. We would think that far from the sun, you wouldn't find anything like that, but it's there. And so that takes us out to Neptune. And I think that covers our first part of the podcast. I want to move on to our segment on The Internet is Dumb.
The Internet is Dumb.
This week on The Internet is Dumb, we are covering two hoaxes that have been going around the internet for a while. One is a mythical planet X called Nibiru. Yeah, not real, or at least not verified. This is an idea that somewhere deep in the outer solar system is this planet that we haven't discovered yet, and it's on this crazy orbit that takes it very close to Earth every once in a while, and so it comes near Earth, and it will either someday crash into Earth or cause a lot of problems when it gets here. What do you think?
It's just one of those planets, you know. It wanted to run away from home, and it's just not doing good. I personally think this will happen. I don't know why. I just kind of, this hoax makes me feel good.
It makes you feel
good. Because I won't be alive when it happens, so it makes me feel good.
This was one of the things about the hoax is, if you remember a few years ago, everybody was saying, oh, the world's going to end in 2012 because the Mayan calendar ends.
I got taken from school that day.
Yeah. What?
I wasn't allowed to go to school with my parents because everybody was crazy jumping off cliffs so the aliens would take them. Mm. So I just kind of didn't go to school that day. It was not a very good day. It
turns out the world didn't end, though. So the problem with the theory is, one, first of all, you don't need something that big to crash into Earth to cause a lot of problems. Even something a mile wide could wipe out civilization if it hit Earth. You don't need a whole planet. But even if it did, think of it this way. Let's say the planet comes real close. Well, what's the planet going to do to affect Earth? It's got one property that it has, which is gravity. So
we'd float.
It would pull us, right? So, but here's the problem. Let's say the solar system is 4.5 billion years old. So let's say this planet had an orbit that was really long, and it took 10,000 years for it to go around the sun once and come back to this neighborhood. That's still 450,000 orbits over the life of the solar system. And you would think that in 450,000 orbits, it would have caused enough problems. In fact, if it got close and it actually yanked Earth out of its orbit, well, Earth's not going to put itself back in place. So that's one of the ways you can tell this isn't happening, because otherwise it would have moved other planets around. It would have caused that effect by now. So that's kind of it for Nibiru. Now, that doesn't mean there couldn't be other objects in the outer solar system that could come our way. In fact, that happens fairly frequently. There's comets that come by. Halley's Comet hangs out in the outer solar system. It's got about a 76-year orbit. And asteroids and smaller things do that all the time, but not whole planets are kind of unlikely. The other internet is dumb thing we want to talk about is called Nemesis, and it's a similar. These are both boogeymen of the outer solar system. This is the idea that the sun has an evil twin star that, you know, is like maybe 2 light years away and is orbiting the sun. And as it orbits the sun, it knocks comets and asteroids out of their normal field of gravity, and that means they start falling towards us and maybe can hit the Earth and do damage.
Oh. Well, you know, if people don't think the first one's real, then why think the second one is? I mean, there's more stars than the sun, obviously.
There are, but not close by. That's the thing, is you'd have to assume that this star was somehow undiscovered, yet it's the closest one. That seems a little unlikely. We've been scanning this guy a long time, and it would be very surprising that it was a star less than 2 light years away that we just didn't notice until now. That's not to say there aren't a lot of objects in the outer solar system that need attention, like comets and asteroids, or we can talk about dwarf planets. Let's get on to Pluto.
Pluto, Mickey, why did you let Pluto go?
Well, maybe now it's a good time to go to our mailbag, because we got a couple of good questions about Pluto, so let's do it.
She wrote about it. Return to sender. Address unknown. No such number. No such song.
I don't want to read all this mail.
Our first email actually is not about Pluto, but the first question is from Taylor Kay, and she asks, how old are Saturn's rings? Well, as we kind of talked about, it's not entirely clear how old they are. They've certainly been there since Galileo discovered them in the 1600s, but they're probably much older than that. But the question is, were they there from the time when Saturn formed at the beginning of the solar system, or are they something that got busted apart into a million pieces and are floating around? The jury's still out on that. We don't know.
I still think it was probably once a moon or something like that, and it burst it apart, and it's still in the gravity, obviously, and it's going to... That's my thought.
That's a good thought, and I think the scientists are more inclined to believe that, because what we think is the rings shouldn't be that stable over that long a period of time. Over time, gravity should pull the rings back together, or even with these little shepherd moons, and they may be getting slowly bigger over time too. So it may take a while, but Saturn's rings should probably disappear. Neptune, Uranus, and Jupiter all have rings, but they're much smaller. And we think that they have maybe are older and they're decaying, and so there's less of them left. So that may happen to Saturn too. So because that happens to rings over time, we would think that they can't be 4 billion years old like the rest of Saturn is. So they may be younger, but beyond that, hard to be a little more exact. So this goes to our Pluto questions. Nathan B. and Jason G. both asked very similar questions. I posted a picture on our Facebook page of what the sun looks like from different planets, because you get farther and farther away, and Pluto wasn't on the list. And so Nathan B. wrote in, where's Pluto? And Jason G. wrote in, Pluto is missing. It's the same size as Mercury, so why is everybody calling Pluto the baby of the planets when it's the same size as Mercury and it is a real planet, not an outcast? Sad face, sad face, sad face, sad face, sad face, sad face.
Oh, you should have just cried and put a bunch of tears.
Yeah, you almost did. People get really worked up about the fact that Pluto is not considered a planet anymore. So, just to be a couple of things about this. One, you can dry your tears. It's still there, and it doesn't care what you call it. It's a big ball of ice and rock 4.5 billion miles away. It doesn't have feelings, so it's all right. We didn't even know it was there until 1930. In fact, Uranus and Saturn were not known to the ancient astronomers. Uranus was discovered in the 1700s, and Neptune was discovered in the 1800s. Uranus was discovered in telescopes because it's not really very visible with the naked eye. It's too far away. Maybe on a very clear night, and if you know where to look, you can see it. But Neptune, what happened was they were observing Uranus, and they saw that its orbit was being slightly perturbed, and they were wondering, well, there must be something with gravity pulling on it, and they used mathematics to predict where that thing was, and when they pointed their telescopes at it, sure enough, Neptune was there. And they noticed perturbations or disturbances in Neptune's orbit, too, and they thought, well, maybe there's another planet out there pulling on them. And eventually, they did find Pluto. Now, Pluto's too small to have that effect. It doesn't do that. And it turned out that the stuff that they were seeing was basically Uranus and Neptune pulling on each other. And as the math got better, we figured there's not really a 10th planet X out there. But they did find Pluto. Pluto is smaller than Mercury, but it does have 5 moons, so it's got that going for it.
And I've seen Pluto with the naked eye.
Yeah, have you?
I went to Disneyland a couple of weeks ago.
So the question is, why isn't it a planet anymore? Well, what happened was, in the early 2000s, a scientist named Mike Brown discovered another object even farther out that was actually slightly bigger than Pluto. And they said, well, is this going to be planet number 10? And then they thought, well, if this is going to be planet number 10, we've actually found a lot of similar objects out in the solar system. There's one called Sedna. There's one called Makemake, which is named after a Hawaiian god. There's Haumea, and there's one called Kwawar. I think I'm pronouncing that right. So the thought was, well, if Pluto is going to be a planet, then we have to have all of these things as planets, and then we could wind up with 15 or 16 planets. That just seemed a little unruly. So the International Astronomical Union got together, and they said, well, maybe we should decide on the definition of what a planet really is. And what they decided was a planet has to have two qualities. Well, three. One, it's going around the sun and not around another planet. Two, it is round, that has enough gravity to pull itself into a sphere, which Pluto has, but it doesn't have the third thing, which is it has to clear out its orbit of other stuff. It has to kind of sweep it clean. And Pluto doesn't do that. Pluto is at a sort of angled orbit to the sun compared to the rest of the planets. And it's in an area called the Kuiper Belt on the outskirts of our solar system, which is mostly comets and things. So because Pluto hasn't really cleaned out its orbit and it's just full of junk, it is reclassified as a dwarf planet, as is Eris, E-R-I-S. That was the 10th supposed planet that sort of kicked this whole thing off. And that's why Pluto is reclassified, because there's just too many of these types of small but round objects hurtling around the sun, you know, 4, 5, 6 billion miles away. So that's it. He got kicked out of the planet club. Sorry.
I'm sorry, Pluto. Yeah. At least I've seen you at least once.
Yeah. Well, and as we said, we have a probe called New Horizons that's going to get there in about a year, so we're going to learn a lot more about what Pluto is like. But the definitions don't really matter. Pluto's been there long before we were here to give it a name or even know about it, so it'll be fine, whatever you call it. It's still part of our solar system. So
I wonder if the planets are mad that we named them. I mean, they were here first. They could have had different names, but we named them.
That's true. In fact, ancient cultures named them different things. We ended up ultimately going with the Roman versions of their names, which, so Mercury, Venus, not Earth, but Mars, Jupiter, Saturn, Uranus, and Neptune and Pluto are all Roman gods, and we went with that. But if you were to go back in a time machine 3,000 years ago and talk to an Egyptian or someone from China or Japan, they would have a different name for them. But we had to all agree on something eventually, so we went with these. These were the ones that won out. So, and then there is one more question in our mailbag. This is from Jennifer L., and it's for you, Brandon. Brandon, if you could live anywhere else in the solar system, where would you go?
Ooh, Well, Jennifer L., this is a great question. I think I'd have to go, you know, to Jupiter, because I want to see what getting stupider is like. But I really want to go experience, you know, the winds, obviously. But I want to see the storms, and I just think it would be funny, even though I probably wouldn't survive very long. Somewhere I'd probably survive, probably Mars.
Yeah, that's probably your best chance of going somewhere you could actually live, which is why we've focused so much energy on trying to, you know, maybe send humans there. Because, you know, if we want to go to the outer solar system, it's hard to get to. It's far away. And, in fact, most of the probes we've sent have had to we use Jupiter's gravity as a slingshot to kind of speed them up. So if you want to get, for example, the probe that's going to Pluto, we actually sent it past Jupiter so that Jupiter's gravity could kind of give us a boost.
Ooh.
But here's the problem. If you wanted to do that with people, you'd have to get close to Jupiter, and that means getting close to all of the lethal radiation.
Oh.
So we have to solve that problem first of finding a way that humans can survive even getting close to Jupiter for, you know, the few, you know, the week it would take to get past.
Don't they just have to put on their pants and they'll be fine?
Oh, that's it. That's just a pair of pants. That's all we needed. Well, problem solved. Yeah. We've only sent a few probes to the outer solar system because it's hard to get to and it's far away. But one of the most important ones was Voyager 1 and Voyager 2. These were they were sent in 1977 at a time when the four outer planets lined up in just such a way that you could actually send one to Jupiter. Jupiter's gravity would grab it and throw it in the direction we needed it to go, and that would take it to Saturn. Saturn would take it to Uranus, and Uranus would take it to Neptune, and then out. Before we close, I do want to talk about this, which is Voyager 1 went to Saturn, and as it left Saturn, it actually went up and out of the solar system. It didn't go on to Uranus, Neptune. It just went straight up. And from that high, high vantage point, it was able to look down on the rest of the solar system, and it did what we called a family portrait and was able to get all of the planets, as many as it could, into one picture. And Earth in that picture is the size of one pixel. It's one pale blue pixel. And there's a very famous speech about it by Carl Sagan called The Pale Blue Dot. So we're going to sign off for now. If you want to, with one more thing on the pale dot, if you want to leave us questions, if you have ideas, things you want to ask us, you can go to our Facebook page, go to facebook.com/quarksandrec, or you can tweet us at quarksandrec.com, or you can email me at doug@quarksandrec, and we'll get all of those things. Next time, we've got a brand new topic we're going to get away from space. We're going to be covering dinosaurs.
Roar.
We're going back to the Jurassic period, so that'll be pretty cool. So if you have questions about dinosaurs, send them our way. And until then, I'm going to leave you with this audio of the Pale Blue Dot speech by Carl Sagan, because I think it's the most important lesson that we can take away from our trip to the outer solar system. I think it's a very important thought. So that's it for this episode. We'll see you next time. I'm Doug.
I'm Brandon. Bye-bye.
See you later.
From this distant vantage point, the Earth might not seem of any particular interest. But for us, it's different. Consider again that dot. That's here. That's home. That's us. On it, everyone you love, everyone you know, everyone you ever heard of, every human being who ever was, lived out their lives. The aggregate of our joy and suffering. Thousands of confident religions, ideologies, and economic doctrines. Every hunter and forager, every hero and coward, every creator and destroyer of civilization. Every king and peasant, every young couple in love, every mother and father, hopeful child, inventor and explorer, every teacher of morals, every corrupt politician, every superstar, every supreme leader, every saint and sinner in the history of our species lived there, on the mote of dust, suspended in a sunbeam. The Earth is a very small stage in a vast cosmic arena. Think of the rivers of blood spilled by all those generals and emperors so that in glory and triumph they could become the momentary masters of a fraction of a dot. Think of the endless cruelties visited by the inhabitants of one corner of this pixel on the scarcely distinguishable inhabitants of some other corner. How frequent their misunderstandings. How eager they are to kill one another. How fervent their hatreds. Our posturings, our imagined self-importance, the delusion that we have some privileged position in the universe, are challenged by this point of pale light. Our planet is a lonely speck in the great enveloping cosmic dark. In our obscurity, in all this vastness, there is no hint that help will come from elsewhere to save us from ourselves. The Earth is the only world known so far to harbor life. There is nowhere else, at least in the near future, to which our species could migrate. Visit? Yes. Settle? Not yet. Like it or not, for the moment, the Earth is where we make our stand. It has been said that astronomy is a humbling and character-building experience. There is perhaps no better demonstration of the folly of human conceits than this distant image of our tiny world. To me, it underscores our responsibility to deal more kindly with one another and to preserve and cherish the only home we've ever known, the pale blue.